Hey, what's up, everyone? I'm Sarah.
I'm Liz.
And this is the It's Fine, I'm Fine podcast. This week, we decided to interview two different people who are really trailblazers in the mental health community. And I like how you said that. I like the trailblazer word.
Thank you very much.
And they're two people who are really like taking the lead in trying to provide outlets and resources for people, whether that be on Slack or via their own video system. But they're both digital online services to provide support for people to talk about how they're feeling.
Definitely. So the first clip you're going to hear is with a man named Zach Schlein. And he has a company called 18%, which he's going to tell you a little bit more about. And that's sort of a Slack-based mental health conversation channel. So it was cool to learn about the genesis of that company and how you can kind of use it for yourself if that's a community you'd like to be a part of. And then the second person we spoke to is a woman named Elettra Dennerline. She's an Italian woman, but she lives in the UK. And she started the first online virtual therapy similar to our partner BetterHelp, but in the UK. So it was really interesting to learn about how she started that company. You know, she came from Tesla, really interestingly, and she had been in therapy and wanted to have more of a resource for virtual therapy. So we're excited to present you with two very different but awesome people who have a lot to share about mental health.
Yeah. So with that, we hope you enjoy the episode and let us know if you have any questions or thoughts and enjoy.
Enjoy the show. We are joined by Zach Schlein, Syracuse alum, entrepreneur, and mental health advocate. After Zach's close friend's passing with mental illness, Zach dedicated his time to helping others through their mental illness. After raising funds for the National Alliance on Mental Illness, Zach teamed up with his close friend David to launch a mental health community on Slack called 18%. 18% of Americans live with mental illness, so Zach's goal was to bring together people who may sometimes feel uncomfortable talking about their struggles. With that, Zach, do you have anything you want to add? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I think you summed it up pretty well. So I guess it started 2 years ago, and before that I really had zero mental health experience, any connection to mental health, and I had a close family friend by the name of Lewis. And he was a brilliant student, A's, an athlete, incredible musician. And at the age of 19, he was diagnosed with bipolar and schizoaffective disorder. And it really like derailed his life. And I mean, it's pretty fascinating, unfortunately, right? Like you're doing really well, everything's great. And then something happens, like a flip of a switch. And he struggled, and it was a challenge for his whole family. And a couple of years later, he went for a walk and didn't come home. And his remains were found near a river.
Yeah. Very sorry to hear that.
Yeah. So, I wanted to do something for the family. And I ended up using a platform at Johnson & Johnson to raise money for a nonprofit, and the nonprofit was NAMI, National Alliance on Mental Illness. Mm-hmm. And the first crowdfunding project I ran was for about $10,000 to raise that funds to help teens who have mental health issues. So really important to me. And then started 18%. Obviously, we'll go into more detail on the episode. And then I started another project for Mental Health Awareness Month. And this time, the goal was to raise $30,000 for the Family to Family program at NAMI El Dorado and to train families and support families who have at least one member of their family with some sort of mental health condition. And that's where Lewis's parents were living nearby, near El Dorado. So Lewis's dad, Fred, he was a huge contribution to both campaigns. And he started after we successfully hit the $30,000, so total about $40,000. And Fred started volunteering for NAMI El Dorado and took a really a lot of interest in helping. And it was really helpful, I know, in his own healing to like give back and help others who may be going through something similar that he had went through. So I think that's one thing that I've noticed in this whole journey. A lot of times with mental health, like you may be struggling, but then when you start helping others, it really helps with your own struggle. So in between, we started 18%, David Markovich and myself, and it really took off. We're up to over 9,000 members, like 1.2 million messages. So it's a really active community. We're one of the top referrals for the crisis text line. So if you're in if you reach out to the crisis text line and you're not actively suicidal, but you may just need support, they will refer you to 18%.
Wow. So can you tell us how it works? And if someone wants to sign up, like where do they go? How do they do it? How do you use it, et cetera?
Yeah. So our website's 18%.org, 18% spelled out .org, and it's hosted on Slack. And Slack traditionally is a chat service for companies. And I think it really lines up appropriately with what we're doing, because you may be at work and really struggling. And if you're on a Slack group getting support, your manager really wouldn't bat an eye. However, if you're on like a Facebook depression group, they may say, why are you on Facebook at work? So that's one of the reasons. Also with Slack, it works for all devices. So it's device agnostic. It's a really great tool. So yeah, that's why we chose Slack as the platform to host the community. It's totally free community and it's peer-to-peer support. So we don't have any trained professionals in the community. We do have moderators to make sure the community is safe, to curate the conversations, redirect conversations if they're in the wrong channel, or to welcome new members. But a lot of the members themselves, even though they're not moderators, will do that as well. They'll welcome people. They'll share our guide. Like we have a little quick link to share the guide. But yeah, and then we also have like automation. So if you do express suicide, we do have a bot that provides the crisis text line number, the suicide lifeline number, as well as international line numbers. So it is an international community. Majority is US based, but I think the power again is you may be really young, and it skews younger, but we have people from 16 all the way to like 70.
Wow.
But the majority is in that 16 to 22 range. But like, if you're 16, you may feel very uncomfortable sharing it with your counselor or with your parents. And we definitely recommend you get the right mental health support, not to use 18% primarily. 18% is really a supplement, but some people use it as that first way of getting support. And they'll connect with other people like their age or a few years older. And it's a really positive community. And they say, hey, listen, like, it gets better. I know, like, being bullied is really hard. Like, so, like, it's a way, whether it's bullying, whether it's a bad breakup, whether it's just the normal stresses of living with parents. Like, it could be anything. And just to connect with other people who have gone through something that you've gone through is really powerful. And that's what creates those deep connections in our community.
Do you find that most of the users use, because I don't use Slack very often. So is it anonymous? Like, do the people use their real names? What's that like?
I was about to ask that same question.
Yeah. So all emails are hidden when you sign up. Names, you can use your full name. You could use a fake name. You could use your real photo. You could use a fake photo. So that's up to you. You could stay as anonymous as you'd like.
Got it. And then have you found, I mean, I know you don't have as much intel into this, but do you know if people will sort of start their own chats with individuals because they connect well with someone in the larger channel?
Yeah. So, yeah, it happens. Private, like, DMs, I would say probably half of all messages are DMs. So we have those data points of private and public. But, yeah, I think, right, you're going to build relationships and have your best friends, and you'll message them, how's your day, and build those relationships. But then you're also going to message the broader community just to get support or support others. So what we often see is everyone typically joins 18% because they're looking for support. But then soon enough, they're supporting others. So it's it depends day by day. It could potentially change or minute by minute. So it's a really unique community that 18% offers.
That's amazing. How do people hear about 18%? Like, how do people find out about it?
Yeah. So like I said, crisis text line, big referral, very, very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
We've been covered in the Washington Post, so that helped. We've been covered on Now This podcast, like this, obviously, yeah. Helps spread the word. And then a lot of people will just find it online. So if you Google online mental health community, 18% ranks number one on Google.
Wow.
So yeah, it's becoming a resource, and word of mouth. Like many, many people are learning about 18% from their therapist.
Mm-hmm.
So therapists, again, let's say you're going through something tough. It's midnight and you're not in crisis and you're not going to call your therapist because it's midnight. So you jump onto 18% and you get that support. And then in the morning, you connect with your therapist again. So it's just a really nice like stopgap to get mm-hmm. that support at all hours. I mean, it's a global 24/7 community.
Wow.
So you were talking about how you think that Lewis's father, your friend Lewis's father, helping you raise money was, is that right, that he helped you raise money?
Yeah, I mean, he was a big contributor, reaching out to his friends,
mm-hmm.
strategizing with me, like, because I wanted to make sure, right, it was in honor of his son, so I wanted to make sure, like, our goal was aligned to his goals and what, like, to honor Lewis best. So
exactly.
I kind of threw everything by him. He helped. And I think to answer your question, by Lewis helping, but also supporting the NAMI and taking a bigger role with NAMI El Dorado, that helped, like, with his own healing.
Right.
Similarly to when people are in the community and help
mm-hmm.
other peers, it helps with their own healing. And we see that all the time. People will direct message me or direct message our other moderators and say, hey, listen, this has been like allowing me for tremendous growth. I speak to my therapist about this because I'm able to support others.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say I'm talking about the members themselves and they're and our moderators, it wouldn't be possible without them. And they've taken leadership roles where it's the first time they're doing something in this capacity, and it helps with their own healing. And I tell the moderators, listen, you may be moderators, but you could still ask for support. Like, it doesn't mean you can't. And that's super important to us. And they just have an extra layer of responsibility being a moderator, but they're not invincible.
Honestly, how Liz and I feel about this podcast, like just being able to talk things out and maybe provide support for others is very therapeutic for at least, you know, I can only speak to for myself.
But no, I feel the same way.
I think I speak
way.
For both of us when I say, like, just talking about it and having a platform that allows other people to feel less alone helps our own mental health.
I was going to say I agree. And, like, I think having a more accessible conversation where you're not surrounded by experts throwing statistics and numbers at you that can be intimidating, especially, as you said, some of the people who might use 18% are 16 years old. They might be intimidated by a conversation that sounds very clinical to them. So being able to talk to like peers who have gone through things is just, I think, a better way to introduce people into healing and like being able to better themselves and learn. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How do you see the conversation around mental health changing?
I think it's definitely changed for the better, like around destigmatization.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, sometimes the catalyst is a high-profile individual's death to spark that. So obviously, like with Robin Williams,
mm-hmm.
And I guess that connection is closer. Robin Williams' son, Zach, he did a Q&A in our community. It meant a lot for all of our members to have someone who is notable, who like spend the time, who cared, right, to answer their questions. And Zach spoke about some of the stuff he went through, and that Q&A is on the website. And I think people are more openly speaking about it, and I think I'm also in a unique position by working at a Fortune like 50 company at Johnson & Johnson, and they're taking a big role in mental health and supporting employees as well. And you see this at many large corporations with EAP programs, which stands for employee assistance programs, getting you like a therapist if you need. But I think like having these resources is the first, is very important, but culture is more important. Because mm-hmm. if your culture at large corporations don't allow for you to go to your EAP program, what I mean by that is if you're on a deadline and you can't and you don't feel comfortable telling your manager that you need to step away to meet your counselor, that's an issue. Mm-hmm. So I think culture is like a big part of it that will come, and it's coming, but oftentimes companies will say, hey, listen, we've added resources, so we're getting there. But yeah, that's a first step to it. But sometimes you need to just like chill out, like the company culture, and not work your employees to the bone. Mm-hmm. And when you don't work them to the bone, oftentimes absenteeism is lower and they stay with you longer. So in the end, in a long-term perspective, you actually save a lot of money. In the short term, yeah, you may not have the same amount of output, but from an ROI, it's higher mm-hmm. when you actually care about your employees and create the culture to support your employees.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of people still feel uncomfortable even expressing at work that they, you know, are seeking help or want to go to therapy or need the resources. Like, I don't think it's a conversation that many people are having at work yet. And so, yeah, I mean, we're obviously all working on making that better, but.
So you are kind of someone who's at the forefront of, you know, 18% at your job. I'm curious, like, how you manage your mental health, if you can speak on that a little, because when you're someone who talks about it a lot and advocates for other people, sometimes, I don't know, it can be challenging to make sure that like you're doing okay, because you're dealing with a lot of tough conversations, I would imagine, sometimes.
Yeah, so I think for me, the most important thing is like holistically for my own health is physical health, so working out, sleeping enough, eating well. So I do like hardcore keto. So wow. I think it's like a balance, right? And then also like who you surround yourself with, relationships, making sure you do have fun, that you're not just always working. And doing work is a lot of fun for me. Like the side projects that I run, they actually give me so much energy. Mm-hmm. But I need to make sure I'm taking those other aspects into account. But also, right, you have to have difficult conversations, like on a day-to-day, like with close friends and being honest. And if something's bothering you, to speak up. And I think a lot of that takes like a lot of practice. And I've made a lot of mistakes of like not like being when I was younger, just sometimes not sharing, kind of like risk. What would it be, like risk avoidance?
Yeah, if you were like risk averse, I guess.
Not even risk averse, but like let's say you have a close friend and something is bugging you about them and you just don't bring it up. Mm-hmm. And like if you don't bring it up, yeah, it's easy at first, but over time it's going to get worse and worse. Mm-hmm. So I make sure to have those conversations and just try to be honest and try to keep my word. So
do you feel as though your friends have like opened up more since you've become part of the mental health community? Like, do you feel like they're coming to you more being like, hey, Zach, like you're part of this community. What can I do with this? Or,
well, it's oftentimes they will say, hey, I have a friend. Mm-hmm. Like, uh-huh. What should I do?
Right.
Which is fine. And like, usually I'll just say, hey, they could check out 18%.
Right.
Like check out the resource. They'll be like, what's the name of that site you're on? Mm-hmm. So I've had that many, many times, like
right.
on Instagram or Facebook or just text, or they'll ask for advice and I'll speak to them. But like, I'm not a therapist.
Right.
And it's really just here are the resources. I'm kind of more so directing them to different resources.
Mm-hmm. We, Sarah and I, are actually interested in how to like extend the conversation around mental health to males, because we're obviously women, and I think a lot of our listeners are women too, a majority of them. And so we're curious, like, I don't know if you have a specific insight into the people who communicate on 18%, like the very basic info, but mm-hmm. have you found that the conversation has grown a little bit more among men? Have you found that like the community has started to bring in more men? How do you find that phenomenon?
Data shows, even in our community, like from our general Google Analytics data, that it skews women, right? Mm-hmm. But I think, again, like women are more likely to go for therapy, mm-hmm. men resist. I think, again, it's just by having that conversation. I think men are more comfortable, especially our generation versus our parents' generation. Like, talking about therapy, I would say, is much more open, and it's not as, like, taboo. And, I mean, you could even see from language, right? It's not called, like, a shrink anymore.
Right.
Like, back in the day, that's what it was called. So oftentimes how, like, language evolves as well. So it's pretty interesting. But I think slowly you'll... Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think once we realize that, like, everyone has their ups and downs, and when you realize there's people, you have your days when you're feeling great, and there's days when you're not, and you don't always have to, like, see a therapist or pop medication or... And I think it's really important to understand and get to, like, the root of the problem. And... Yeah, but obviously sometimes it is more severe and you need to take medication. But I think it's really important to first, like, a lot of it stems down from, like, traumas when you're a child. And if you don't deal with that, again, you're going to really screw you up when you get older.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to repeat. Like, why does, like, you'll think, like, why am I not making enough money? Why are my relationships working out? Why are, and it's usually, like, some type of systematic, like, traumatic experience when you're younger. And I think it's important for people to work on themselves.
Absolutely.
Agreed. I think also it's interesting because sometimes the anxieties that I face are really rooted in, like, a bigger problem, like related to my childhood or related to something traumatic that I experienced. But then there's times that, like, stuff in my day is just shitty and I need to just quickly talk to a friend about it. And it can be hard to differentiate, you know, which is which, but I like that you sort of have a community of people who, it could be one thing, it could be the other. Like, I like that you called it a supplement, because probably some of the people who are in there may also be working in therapy or may benefit from working through things in therapy. But there's a sense of, like, sometimes everyone's life, just, you have crappy moments and you need to be able to talk to another person about them. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's the beauty, again, of why it's on Slack. So if you're at your desk and you just had a really bad meeting and you're feeling really down, you could jump into the general get support group and just say, hey, I had a really bad meeting, and people chat with you.
That's awesome.
And then we have a certificate coming out, peer-to-peer support certification, which we're really excited about. There are some certifications out there for, like, mental health support, but they require a tremendous amount of time. And it really is targeted to people that want to get into the field. And that's what they want to do, like, professionally.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to create something where the layman can get that support to support their sibling, support their friend, or maybe they're at work and they want to support their colleagues. So we created a training. There's a really therapist, we partnered with her, who has this training. And it's brands under 18% brand, and there's an exam, and then you can get a certificate when you pass that exam that you're peer-to-peer certified specialist.
So wow.
So really excited to launch that coming out.
That's really cool. It's like CPR training, but similar, different.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
Is there anything else that you want to, like, tell us about 18% or you want, like, people to know? Because I'm sure that a lot of our listeners may have not heard of 18%. So anything that you really want everyone to know?
I mean, I think a common question people ask, like, why is it called 18%?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't even know why I didn't ask that.
And the statistic of, like, 18% of Americans at any given moment have some sort of mental health condition. Mm. And that's diagnosed. So it's probably...
Maybe more. Higher. Yeah.
But again, like, right? If you're feeling crappy one day, do you fall under that percentage?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like... So, yeah. I mean, it ebbs and flows. And I think... What's really important to take away is you're not alone. Even though when you feel like you may be at your lowest or your worst, like, it could get better, and it can get better. Like, really can. Like, I see people every day in the community, and you see them when they first joined till now, and now they're supporting people. And it's tough when you don't see that light at the end of the tunnel. So, and I think when you have those peers that have gone through something that you've gone through, it does make it easier because they can help you navigate. And it's also really important to seek out therapy and seek out a professional or do training on yourself. through a course or training or professional taking medication, like, again, it's unique per person. There's no like prescription, and that's the beauty of 18%. So a supplement, it's a resource that it may be good for you and it may not. You just have to try it and see if that's what you enjoy, is peer-to-peer support. So when it comes down to it, is everyone wants connection, like as human beings. Like, we all seek connection. And when you're at your lowest, oftentimes that's when you feel the most disconnected and you feel the most lonely. And that's what 18% provides. And we want, that's what people feel when they use 18%. And when they think about 18%, they think about connection. And that's the experience we want to leave people.
I think it's like, it seems small, but being able to have these conversations, you can't see it so directly, but being able to bring the conversations to more people will ultimately, like, just have these conversations happen less frequently behind closed doors or not at all. And then, you know, I think that'll help change the culture, as you talked about a little bit earlier.
Yeah. And what that touched upon, also on our moderator calls, we asked, like, do you have any stories you want to share? Because every week we have like 40, 50,000 messages.
Wow.
A lot of conversations going on. And our moderators will just share conversations they've had, and they'll stay anonymous, but they share just what this member said to them, like how it's impacted them. Because you don't see that. And it's bizarre that you're speaking to another human. Mm-hmm. And like, this person is going through like really hard times. They're 16. They're self-harming. Their parents don't agree with them being LGBTQ. Mm-hmm. They're very, like, their family is very religious. It's really tough. And when you realize, like, this is a human, a 16-year-old, it's like really powerful. And they share these stories on these moderator calls, or you just see them in the chats, or you get that direct message. And that's like why me and David and I do this every day. It's just like a reminder of just like, wow, we're actually like impacting lives. And that's why these moderators love it too, because they really see, aside from their own healing, that they really are helping mm-hmm. people. And it's cool to be able to make that difference.
For sure. It's incredible.
I'm going to say, remind everyone again where they can find this resource, yourself, anything you want to plug.
So if you go to 18%.org, you register and you'll get the invitation into the community.
How about yourself? Do you have to use Twitter or anything like
that? Yeah, so 18%'s on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. I use
the number 18.
18 and then percent spelled out. I'm on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. I have a personal website of like stuff I'm doing and working on, and yeah, just trying to give people connection.
Awesome.
That's amazing. This is our first time doing like a remote recording, so bear with us. We've practiced a bunch of times, but we're happy to have you as our like inaugural remote guest, especially someone from literally across the pond. It's pretty cool.
Thanks for having me. Really honored to be inaugurating this process.
Yeah, of course.
We're excited to have you. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, both with mental health and with the company that you work on now?
And how are you feeling?
Well, I think our sort of self-isolation started about 2 days ago. So things are second day of madness, but coping, I have to say. No, but jokes aside, the UK, I think, is, you know, it's kind of maybe a week behind, they say a couple of weeks behind, or who knows what's going to happen next. But yeah, I think it's good to start, you know, early to at least avoid to be more contagious. That's the plan. But no, with regards to myself, I'm, say, a environmental activist turned Tesla sales advisor and turned mental health entrepreneur. So I have quite an extensive background in academia. I did a bachelor in sociology and politics, then went on and did a master's in environmental technology, got quite involved in the sort of environmental scene here in the UK with regards to the actually US-born fossil free movement during my third year at university. It was very much about, I'm going to save the world from environmental catastrophe. And then that was quite a failure, I have to say, for now, at least. Which then led me into sort of getting a bit more academic, or a bit more of an academic background in the environmental scene. So I then went on, did a master's in environmental technology. But throughout my studies, and before that, I had been seeing a therapist. And the reason that, or at least what sparked my interest in going into the mental health world, was personal experience. So I moved to the UK from Italy about 8 years ago. And during that move, after that move, I was essentially left without a therapist because my therapist was back in Italy. So rather than starting from scratch and seeing somebody new, I asked her to go over Skype. And that, so I did a couple of years of remote consultations, which, a couple of years in, I realized were just as effective as going to see somebody physically and going to her studio when I lived back in Rome. So that really sparked, or was the initial seed that sparked my interest in kind of wanting to take this widely and, share my experience and probably, or at least try and make my experience available to other people. So I started doing some background and preliminary research, realized that there were companies already out there, especially in the US, that started in about during the sort of 2013, 2014, offering remote consultations. And though in Europe, we had seen a few sort of companies starting that, but there wasn't one that was, kind of taking over or benchmarking how to go about actually offering, consultations or remote consultations. So I decided to venture in this world and a couple of years ago, and actually was quite lucky in a way to have securing my initial pre-seed money. In Europe, there were also a few companies that kind of granular level scattered here and there. The UK had seen a few, especially like situations where existing clinics might have were offering Skype sessions as well, or individual therapists were offering Skype, but hasn't been really a centralized platform that offering this service. So I decided to venture in this world and see if I could, make this kind of vision into a reality. And I was quite so during the summer of 2017, I started toying around with the idea. Contacted a few designers, started kind of getting my, prototype out there, and or at least figured out, trying to figure out what I really wanted to do. And then in January 2018, while still working at Tesla, I was actually quite lucky to meet an investor who I wasn't actively looking for money. I hadn't been going out for money. I wasn't at that stage yet. I had very much a napkin business plan out and a vague idea of what I wanted to do. And I was quite lucky to find somebody who believed in this vision early on and who gave me some pre-seed money, which allowed me to then leave Tesla tap back into a community. So find a development team to start working on the idea. And then quite early on, at that time, then I had some money and I had a bit of a dev team, but I was missing the psychologist. So as I always say, don't come and talk to me because you'll end up crazier than what you came out as. But so I did some kind of outreach and managed to secure quite a partnership with one of the largest private mental health healthcare clinics in London. And they were also, we found ourselves talking at a similar time where they were also thinking of starting to approach the online world because they were growing more, but more spaces and more clinics means more overhead costs. And of course the online world offers an opportunity where you have larger scale, more reach with less resources. So
we talk a lot, obviously, about the way mental health is spoken about in the US, even just like New York sometimes, because that's kind of the extent of our knowledge. But I'd love to know how you've seen the conversation around mental health in the UK or even Europe more broadly change or develop since, you know, whether since you want to talk about when you started going to therapy or mm-hmm. even just since finding your own company that's available as a resource to right. people in Europe.
Right. I was going to say, why did you choose mental health specifically?
Yeah, no, definitely. So for myself, in terms of my experience, and what I strive to achieve in life, if only I could make a difference in one of my two passions, which mental health and climate change, I think I would say that I would be satisfied in terms of having really made an impact in one of these two sectors. With regards, I think 10 years ago when I started going to see a therapist, nobody was talking, you know, it was quite taboo to say that you were going to see somebody. And I always felt open to talk about it because I come, you know, I'm quite lucky in terms of my family having quite a history in being open about seeing a therapist. My grandmother at the time sent my mother into therapy this is over 30 years ago. So, and I think Italy, it's a relatively destigmatized place to talk about going into therapy, going to therapy. Similarly, I would say to the kind of US world where it's almost now gone to the other extreme where it's, you're not cool if you're not going to see a therapist. Right.
Especially in New York City, which is where we live. Therapy is like a necessity, and everyone, I feel like now people are talking about it a lot more.
Totally.
Which is amazing. But it's relatively new still that people are outwardly talking about it.
Definitely. It's relatively new. And I think in the more, granular level of conversations, whether it's with friends and family, even at the time when I was going 10 years ago or when I started going 10 years ago, it was that kind of level of acceptance and closer friends and family. I think what we've been seeing also in Europe in the last 2 years, I would say, is quite a huge shift at a much broader and top down level of a lot of people, you know, governments and companies and private sector, public sector, VIPs. The conversation, like the Pandora box, has been open. I have this feeling where the conversation has started and it's really, really out there right now. Now, I think it's still at the time where, you know, there's a difference between having this top down, everybody talking about it, and then verticalizing that into actually actioning things and making it available for people not to feel worried about speaking out and speaking up because they feel that they need help. You know, I think that is still something that we're seeing. And of course, companies like mine, where we're helping give people access remotely, it's the whole point is to break that fear. So break the fear of deciding and making that leap of and going and seeing somebody and seeking for help.
I think that's something we talk about a lot because we do acknowledge that the conversation around mental health and anxiety has become more popularized, and we're watching like reality TV or just any programs on TV and people are talking about it more. And I always see people on Twitter like, it's so great that they're talking about this, and that's great and that's part of it. But I also think it's so important that the people who, you know, want to talk about their specific everyday anxieties are actually seeking out resources for themselves.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. It's really bridging the gap between the sort of higher level of opening the conversation and, okay, what do we actually do about it? And how do we offer people resources? What resources do we offer? How quick can they access help? Because that's also something very important, where you suddenly open the box, everybody's talking about it. And then if you don't have, if you don't actually have the resources for people to access, then that's also creating an issue.
Right. So how was the response to like your company been and the growth, and are you seeing a lot of people signing up, or what is it like? Like, are a lot of people willing to speak to a psychologist online?
Yes. So I think we are up against in a way behavior change. So there is still on the front, so on the side both of the psychologist and on the side of the client, there is in a way this initial challenge of realizing or understanding that online is the same or is just as effective as going face to face and in a clinic or in sort of a therapist studio. And we've seen, I mean, the U.S. in the sort of telehealth space has been a pioneer in, you know, opening that door and people using online therapy a lot. So from our side, we launched in October 2018, and since then we've had, you know, over 15,000 downloads. So people are download and very happy about the service. We're getting great reviews and the community is happy and because we work strictly with clinical psychologists, it means that we strive for quality. So we make sure that we're vetting and recruiting the highest qualified professionals to deliver therapy, which means we can also deliver on sort of all symptoms based, you know, we treat pretty much all types of issues and we cover, that allows us to treat all types of issues. So from sort of milder anxiety and stress to, you know, more clinical depression, like we treat everything on the spectrum, unless it's of course in patient care, which is different type. Right. It's not our case, but which means we're also offering almost 25 therapeutic approaches. So, you know, we're treated. Yeah. And that's because we work with clinical psychologists. So yes, I think the community's happy. We're offering a great service. We've had a lot of downloads over the last more or less 18 months.
I'm really curious. Have you seen growth in, you know, like subscription or use in the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, that's a great
question. That's a very good, yeah. I mean, interestingly, because it kind of coincides with a partnership we announced recently with Professor Green. I'm not sure if you know him, but he's a famous rapper in the UK. So we saw a spike when we announced that partnership, which is relatively, coincides with the outbreak of coronavirus. So I can't really tell you which of the two have driven the spike yet. But I'm sure that the marketing campaign, which hadn't been planned this way, but happens to be quite, or happens, yeah, to be coincide with this outbreak. So I think I will be able to tell, to know more in a couple of weeks, whether the downloads go crazy and as soon as people start hearing about us. But I mean, every time I read the news just before starting this podcast, actually I was reading news on mental health, and everything is about mental health and coronavirus. So I wouldn't be surprised if once we do even launch a marketing campaign, we suddenly see even more of a spike of what we are forecasting.
Yeah, Liz and I were just talking about how important it is to have like digital resources right now, and for people to have like counseling online, because it's just never been more relevant before. I mean, right now it seems that everyone's looking for, like, everyone's like turning their businesses into online platforms. And, you know, Liz and I go to therapy ourselves, and our therapists, my therapist at least, like, I don't think that online counseling is something that they usually do, but now they're doing it because of the coronavirus.
Yep.
So, you know, it seems like it would be a really great time for your business to thrive.
Totally.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, I have to say, I have my, we're quite, there's a division where my, from my family side, I get this kind of, oh, you should, you know, you should market, you should market a coronavirus therapy. And then on the other side, you're thinking, okay, I can't really market it on that side. But it will, now jokes aside, it will naturally, I think, happen that it is. I mean, I feel it myself now that I have to be in the house. I have to self isolate. It's definitely not easy, especially in this day and age when people are more used to being outside than inside. Go, you know, be it dining, be it at the gym, be it everything that we do, and suddenly, you know, from one day to the other, you're constrained and confined in your four walls, and yeah. So a lot of things can surface, which is, you know, it's great. I think it's great in one way because you don't often get a chance to just, as my yoga teacher would say, sit down and shut up and look inside. And so I think in a way it's a great opportunity. But of course, the backdrop of that or on the other side of the coin is that it's the opening of you don't really know what. So it could be that, you know, it's a lot of things resurface in you. And it's great that we can have tools where telehealth is available, where, you know, we can assist people remotely.
Totally. Definitely. I think we're really, you know, privileged to be able to talk to people who are trailblazers in the mental health field. But I'm also always curious about how your individual mental health or your mental health has been affected by the field that you're in, has changed, has gotten better. Like, I can imagine that there are some things about being in the mental health field that have really helped you because you've been able to see so many positive outcomes, but there might be some things that are a little bit stressful, running a business, having to deal with so many different types of issues that might arise when you work for a mental health company. So I'd love to hear about, like, you individually and how you kind of have taken care of yourself.
Totally.
Absolutely. I think my first crisis point I had when I or what led me into therapy was primarily my relationships. So relationship issues where I was into I was essentially, you know, forming relationships that were not necessarily healthy. Mm-hmm. This about 10 years ago, and also I had quite a stressful relationship with my mother, driven by my choice of relationships or in men. So that drove a difficult relationship also with my mother. So that's what sparked my that was what led me into therapy about 10 years ago. So I think that that journey was very, very important for me in terms of, you know, building the foundations for a healthier self in relationships, for a healthier self in the relationship with my mother. So in the relationship with the family in general. And of course, it's still something that I'm doing to this day. But I think that that's definitely something that is belongs in my past and in my present and will most likely belong in the future because we never really stop evolving. So but then when I started a business, it's a whole other level of challenges for the self as well. So I, of course, you know, suddenly you've gone from being probably in the largest, or arguably in the largest startup in the world, Tesla, where you build, you're building, or I feel like I've built a lot of muscles for the hustler in my time at Tesla. But suddenly you find yourself from, you know, selling cars to needing to start a company and, you know, looking at financial spreadsheets, looking at speaking to accountants, speaking to investors, needing to hire people. Like, it suddenly throws you into a whole new world of challenges. And would it have not been for going back into therapy, I definitely don't think I would have come out on the other side the way I am today, and the way I have managed, you know, to build a strong team, a team that has brought me to where I am today. I definitely, in terms of taking care of myself, like you said, I'm still going to therapy. I can't live probably without the gym. I heard in the last part that one of you is a yoga teacher as well.
Yeah. That's me. I'm a yoga instructor, Sarah.
Yoga instructor, Sarah.
Yeah.
So yoga is also very important. I mean, I've been practicing yoga also for 10 years. So definitely these are essential parts of my life that I couldn't do. And I don't think I could give back to my team to the people around me in the way I do, would it not be for these things?
Absolutely. We always say that in order to help others, like, you really need to work on yourself. And that doesn't mean that you need to have everything figured out. But as long as you're working on your own well-being, then you're able to, you know, help support other people. So that's awesome that, you know, you've done so much to take care of your own, like, mental health and well-being.
Absolutely.
We would love to. I mean, I think we are continuing to build our audience, but for any UK listeners that we may have, we'd love for you to kind of talk a little bit about where they can find you and your company. And even just for our American listeners as well, I think it'd be great for them to learn a little bit more about your company and where they can find you.
Yeah. And just to add on to that, it's really interesting to learn about how the UK is approaching mental health, because we really have no idea.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No insight into that. So thank you for sharing.
For sure. So we are app based. So you can find us on Google Store, App Store as My Online Therapy. It's really, hopefully, very user friendly, or that's at least the feedback that I've been receiving. So we've managed to translate pretty much a very, I would say, offline experience into an online experience, or that has been our objective in the last 18 months whilst building the app. So our partnership with the Chelsea Psychology Clinic in London, as I was saying before, the partnership with this clinic, and so a physical entity, has given us the opportunity to build the app very much from a psychologist point of view and from a client point of view. So we've tried to bridge that and bring it together. One of the most challenging aspects of going into therapy is actually finding the therapist, you know. So once you've realized or come to grips with the fact that you want to find help, the next question is, where do I find help? You know, who do I ask? And of course, generally speaking, word of mouth has been in therapy. But actually in the UK, one of the first points of contacts would be your general practitioner. So I don't know, in the US is like your first doctor point of contact. Mm-hmm. In our case, we've tried to streamline that process as much as possible. And so for somebody to find a psychologist, they download the app and they go through a questionnaire, which essentially is very similar to the questionnaire that you would get if you pick up the phone and talk to somebody in the physical clinic. And that questionnaire acts a little bit as a pre-diagnostics tool, in the sense that it gives it tries to collect as some information in terms of your history, of whether you've had therapy before, what kind of symptoms you have, whether you've been on medication, and that helps us match you to the most suitable psychologist. Or we're hoping that it allows people to find help as soon as possible. And so after the first assessment, you then start your journey. But if you think that for an insurance company, it can take an average to about 6 weeks to put somebody in front of a clinician, then that we're really very proud of being able to offer access to help in as soon as that, you know, as soon as 3 minutes on an app, which is, so I think for us, that's been the major goal in terms of the accessing help. Yes. Does that answer your question?
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah.
I think that gives our listeners a good perspective of what to expect when they do online therapy in general. But of course, it's great to hear about how you've sort of mastered that at your company.
We've tried very much to move away from a directory kind of platform where you don't, as a patient or as a user, you go in and you don't really know, you know, you start reading of all these profiles, but you don't really know, you can't really tell who would be the best person or qualified person to answer your needs. And so we've tried really and we've succeeded in building that first step that, you know, takes away all that hustle.
Thank you so much for telling us about your company and what you guys are doing to help the mental health community. And it's really interesting to learn about what you're doing in the UK. As I said before, like, we really have no insight into what's happening over there.
Yeah.
So thank you. And thank you for continuing to destigmatize mental health. It's always appreciated.
Thank you. Thank you, ladies, so much also for helping out in this process as well. I mean, it's so important to have so resources such as podcasts and you know, especially where people are, you know, offering their experience and giving back in a way to society through their stories, and hoping that allows and gives people space to find the help they need.
Comfort, yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, and comfort them.
Yeah, cool. All right. Well, thank you so much. Please stay healthy and stay safe.
Likewise.
Yeah.
So per usual, you can find us on Instagram at It's Fine I'm Fine Pod, on Twitter at It's Fine I'm Fine PD. There wasn't enough room. You can follow me on Instagram at Liz Height, on Twitter at Liz Tweets 5. How about you?
You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, all the sorts at Sarah L. Sassone. That's N like Nancy. With that, it's fine. I'm fine.
It's fine. I'm fine.
Bye.
Bye.